In 1935, when FDR signed the Social Security Act into being, the USA was still mired in the Great Depression and World War II loomed on the European horizon. It is hard to imagine today what this New Deal must have sounded like to the American people. A retirement date of 65 was set, which meant that on that day men were eligible to receive, according to government publications, quote, a monthly check to you for the rest of your life beginning when you are 65, end quote. Too good to be true? A monthly check to pay for retirement for men who are still out of work, standing in line in soup kitchens? But how much money could men whose life expectancy in 1935 was 59.9 years, how much could they expect to receive? 8 years later, Social Security is still with us, morphed into a fiercely defended entitlement. Men and women still receive monthly checks, and retirement, once never entertained as a possibility, is now mandated or assumed, carefully planned for, and keenly anticipated, or in some cases approached with uncertainty and concern. Not only so, because of dramatic advantage in medical science and increasing awareness of behaviors that are self-destructive, life expectancy has shot up and quality of life has kept pace. Now, instead of U.S. men and women facing retirement at 65, albeit with little chance of reaching that milestone in good health, large segments of the population not only fully expect to enjoy a healthy retirement, they expect to enjoy it for a considerable length of time. In an effort to keep up with the advances of 21st century culture, I decided to Google the word retirement and see what I could learn. The definition offered was simple and straight to the point. Quote, retirement, the action or fact of leaving one's job and ceasing to work, end quote, or, quote, the period of one's life after leaving one's job and ceasing to work, end quote. According to these definitions, leaving a job and ceasing to work define retirement. That being the case, it would appear that one's attitude to employment and work generally affects one's approach to retirement. In a British bank to which I was appointed, I was introduced to a small group of senior men, all of whom made it clear to me that they were eagerly looking forward to their retirement, even though it lay some years in the future. They had hit a glass ceiling of opportunity. Their work was no longer interesting or fulfilling. A pension was assured, and they were simply putting in time on the job. They couldn't wait to leave their jobs and cease working. And those twin objectives dominated their lives throughout their middle age. On the other hand, many men find their identity in their work. If you engage a man in conversation, and if it progresses beyond the usual topics of weather, politics, latest scores, and the stock market, in all probability, the subject will become jobs and work. It becomes obvious that he puts in long hours, expends much mental and physical energy, derives great satisfaction as he produces services or materials of value. He is conscientious and committed. He's a worker. He is recognized as such. He is rewarded admirably for his efforts and is widely respected in the workplace and beyond. His work defines him. But then retirement greets him, and suddenly that which defines him is no more. He's a worker who no longer needs to work. The job he loved has gone to another or no longer exists. Who is he? What is he going to do? Of course, many women working outside the home face similar issues. And if they are married, they have the added issue of timing their retirement to that of their spouse. But what of the women who've devoted themselves to the noble tasks of home building and child rearing? They too face an inevitable reality. Their children will grow up. They will leave the family home to establish their own homes and families, And the woman whose identity was bound up in her children and their care finds herself asking similar questions to the man bereft of his office, severed from his job. She hasn't exactly retired, and she has not been declared redundant, but she is facing perhaps another 30 years of life, very different from the life she knows, that she needs to translate into healthy, meaningful, productive living. Retirement for her requires redefinition. When I was approaching my 70th birthday, I announced to the church I pastored at the time that I was stepping down from my responsibilities as senior pastor. I added, by way of explanation, I have no plans to retire or expire. This admittedly semi-facetious statement was interpreted by some as, quote, Stuart doesn't believe in retirement, and he has a point. The Bible doesn't mention retirement. Well, it is correct to say that the Bible is silent on the subject of retirement, bearing in mind that the concept was not invented by the Germans until the late 19th century and enshrined in US law in the early 20th century. Remember that there are innumerable things that the Bible does not mention that we take for granted. But rather than focusing on what the Bible does not mention, we should be clear on the matters it does raise, and that includes the fact that the Bible is clear that mankind was created to be productive. God worked, examined all that he had created, and pronounced it good. Jesus worked at a trade. He was a carpenter. The apostles supported themselves with their hands, fishing and tent making. And Paul reminded the Thessalonians, quote, when we were with you, we gave you this rule. The one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. And the psalmist put into words what should be the cry of our hearts. Establish the work of our hands for us, O Lord. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Psalm 90, verse 17. That being the case, based on the definition of retirement as ceasing from work, how do we square ceasing from work and fulfilling the divine mandate encapsulated in the familiar expression, 6 days do your work, but on the seventh do not work? More on that later. It is important in this discussion to note not only that God worked, but on the seventh day he rested. Moreover, as we saw, he mandated a similar rhythm of work and rest for the well-being of mankind. In fact, for the whole living created order. It's fascinating to note that when God required Israel to work for 6 days and to reserve one day for no work, he specifically included slaves, strangers, donkeys, and oxen in the requirements of work and rest, as indeed was the land on which their crops were grown. Every seventh year, the land lay fallow, resting. The people of Israel had to work hard, so the off day was no doubt most welcome. But there was more. They were also required to take a break 3 times a year to visit Jerusalem for the regular festivals. In other words, a rhythm of work and rest was demonstrated and mandated by God to be followed throughout the life, and presumably on into the relatively new concept of retirement. So let me talk about retirement and rest for a couple of minutes. When I decided to step down from my position as senior pastor, I was still active, still healthy, still highly motivated, and feeling wonderfully fulfilled. I was far from burned out. I was not bored or underappreciated. Neither was I being passed over or being nudged by the board to move on. My wife and I had concluded together that it was time to give younger people an opportunity to progress, for new minds to grapple with old issues, and for the church to be led by forward-looking younger people rather than an old-timer like myself. But I was about to be surprised. A few weeks before my stepping down, I was sitting in a church service prior to the preaching, automatically monitoring the various components of the service that I'd been doing for years, when I decided to let someone else do it. As soon as I made that decision, I realized that in a few short weeks, that would be the situation all the time. And to my amazement, it was as if a load was suddenly removed from my shoulders, a load that I had not noticed before. I began to realize that I needed rest. For the first time, I began to understand the expression, a well-earned rest. Whether or not my impending rest was well-earned, I had to leave to others to decide. But one thing was clear to me. Responsibilities, however gladly they are assumed, constitute a burden. And burdens are to be borne. But when they are put down, there is relief. Although my circumstances were far different from those of many people in the workforce, I began to recognize the relief that retirement had brought many of my friends. Meeting payrolls and deadlines was no longer their responsibility. Neither was distributing dividends, filling quotas, extinguishing fires, disciplining miscreants, balancing books, satisfying inspectors, paying taxes. Retirement. I hope we can agree that a case can be made for work and an equally valid case can be made for rest. Project those two realities into later years, and we can conclude that it is perfectly appropriate for a man or a woman, should the opportunity arise, to cease from regular remunerated labor and enter into a period of more relaxed living, thereby fulfilling the mandate of rest. But it is not appropriate for a retired person to interpret rest as ceasing from work. Retired people are still human beings created for productive activity. Somewhere, somehow, a balance between rest and work needs to be discovered in retirement years. Stories abound of those who have sought this kind of balance, and the results of their seeking differ widely. Some retire and immediately get another full-time job. Some retire and quickly get a part-time job. Others retire to play. Some slip into couch potato status. Others slide into depression, loneliness, addiction, and many enter into the world of volunteers. In other words, some retire more successfully than others. Some find a balance, others never do. Many prepare carefully, too many prepare not at all. It is widely agreed that planning is necessary. Thinking through when you want to retire, where you would like to live, what you plan to do in your retirement, how your finances will hold up in retirement, and how health issues need to be factored into your thinking is obviously needed. And if you're married, make sure that you start out in agreement about all the above. You might find it helpful to gather much of what I've been saying into the simple phrase, productive leisure, or if you prefer, leisurely productivity. Start with leisure that is more than just stopping, ceasing, finishing. Don't define yourself by what you no longer do. Cherish the time you suddenly have on your hands and say, at last I can be quiet, slower paced, more ready to listen, to explore, to meditate, to read, to play, to contemplate, to smell the roses. Or you may say, what's productive about all that? My response, you'll probably find your blood pressure improves because your stress level has been reduced. Your relationships are enriched because you have time for people. Your mind is expanded because you've chosen to entertain new thoughts. Your worldview expanded because you've explored what you previously ignored. And your spiritual life deepened because you revived, restored, or perhaps initiated spiritual disciplines that fell by the wayside of a busy life or never existed at all. And what does leisurely productivity look like? It looks like a new language learned, a new hobby embraced, a new project started, but with a difference. The difference is you do it at your pace, fitting it into your schedule. You can be your own boss. Oh, and one other thing. I've talked about doing new things in a leisurely fashion, but let's not forget the old things that merit more attention than the busy lifestyle afforded them, like our spouses, our marriages, our grandkids. Time invested in them will be productivity indeed.